Hello, I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show taking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winter Mitchell, comedian Santina Muha, journalist Margaret Wappler, and academic and DJ Oliver Wang. You guys, we're finally back at full Voltron numbers. It's really exciting. No Oliver last week. Frankly, it was a little bit like a non-traditional casting production of Steel Magnolias. We needed some more masculinity in here.
We need the armadillo cake.
We're also getting to know each other at the moment, so I'm going to go around the studio and ask each of you to tell me, who is your favorite cartoon character? Oliver Wang.
All right, I'll have to reach back to my middle school self and pick Rick Hunter from the original Robotech series. You were not ready for that, were you?
I was not, and okay. I want to ask follow-ups, but Colin said that there are no follow-ups on this. Winter Mitchell, favorite cartoon character?
Scooby-Doo.
Santina.
Throwback Doug comes to mind. Modern BoJack Horseman.
Both really solid.
Thank you.
Were so worried. Margaret.
I'm torn between Lisa and Maggie Simpson.
Oh, that's good.
Those are beautiful choices.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Slappy the Squirrel from Animaniacs, and I'm Guy Branum. Coming up in this week's show, all kinds of opinions about the Golden Globes, and we'll be sharing our new music recommendations. But first, let's find out what pop culture news or event have caught our attention this week. So, for example, I myself am all about the first season of Maud because I bought it on Amazon.
Ooh.
And I watched a full season of Maud in like 2 days. And just letting multicam sitcom wash over me, the fact that we used to be good enough at it that we could make something that did have a joke every 45 seconds, but still was really smart and really political. There was one episode that was about Florida the maid, her husband sort of saying, I don't want you to work anymore, and her saying...
James Evans.
Though he was called a different name in that episode because it was the one that introduced him.
I hate when they do that.
But the thing was that it was this, like, it ended with these two beautiful monologues, him sort of talking about, like, economic marginalization of black men and how he felt that he was demeaned by his wife having to work as a maid, and then her talking about the pride that she had in the long tradition of black women working as maids. And it's like, both of these made me cry. And then it's like, and an old Jew wrote this in 1972? What's wrong with television today? All right, that's me. Margaret. What are you all about this week?
Well, I know we're going to talk about this more when we get to the Golden Globes discussion, but I have been drinking in Transparent and really savoring it, really enjoying it. I have to say it's interesting as an LA person that feels like I could almost be friends with some of the characters, some of the children, if they weren't so horrible. but it has a way of feeling very familiar to me and yet completely transporting because of the way that they tackle gender and the fact that Jeffrey Tambor's character is going from Mort to Mora. And it's just a beautifully composed show. Really interesting dynamic issues. I mean, so much to talk about, but in a nutshell.
How funny is it? I haven't watched it yet. I feel like with so many of these streaming shows, I hold off because I'm like, it's not going to be worth it. And then I watch them and it's worth it. How funny is it?
It has its moments of being definitely laugh out loud funny, but there will be scenes that are not particularly played for laughs, but just about all of them have some kind of humor running through it.
And is it an hour long? Is it always 40 minutes or so?
No, it's a half an hour.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Santina, what are you all about this week?
I am all about the app Trivia Crack. I've been playing it. It's kind of like Trivial Pursuit, where you have to collect pieces, you know, an entertainment piece, art piece, geography, science, and then sports and history, which it keeps reminding me are my worst subjects. Thank you. I already knew that. And, you know, you can play with your friends, and it's just like something that I'm really into right now that I'll be probably totally over in a few months. But right now it's like, gotta answer my trivia.
You guys, we need to supergroup pub trivia at some point in time.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like
real
we
fun.
Could kill a regional champion.
Winter Mitchell, what are you all about this week?
I'm not so much all about it as I'm super annoyed by it, and it's stayed with me since Friday. Is someone tweeted that there's shirts being sold on Etsy that has Kurt Cobain's suicide note on it. And I mean, it's last year was like the 20th anniversary of his death. And he was super, you know, his music was super influential at a time when I was a San Francisco preteen, angsty, really annoyed with everything.
For those of you at home, Winter is wearing a gray and muted plaid right now.
In solidarity. So there's a shirt being sold on the internet, and I retweeted it, and I got a lot of retweets. I mean, like he would hate that too. But what I tweeted was, he would hate all of this. And yeah. Everybody sort of agreed that, like, this is really morbid and just dark. And this was so against everything that he was all about. So I'm annoyed with that. People stop. Don't do that. Don't make really tragic things into, like, a small business.
Yeah. I mean, like,
a meme.
That's the difficulty of having Etsy, though. I mean, it means that I can completely get yarmulkes with the Rugrats on them. But also, there's going to be that.
Right.
It's the good and the bad.
Yeah.
Oliver Wang, what are you into this week?
The college football championships, which were played last night, a game between the Oregon Ducks and the Ohio State Buckeyes, which I think rather lived up to a lot of expectations. And this is a new system in college football. Since practically its inception, has just been one debate after another about who's the best team. I think there's still going to be debates around whether or not the right team's gotten in the playoffs. But I do think that to the extent that college football, and I think someone in Grantland wrote this this morning, I mean, it's still morally corrupt. It's not better than the NFL and along those lines. But in terms of its entertainment value, something about this new system, at least in its first year, has kind of worked in terms of we got four teams that most people could agree were very good teams that deserved to play each other. And we've now produced a winner, basically, without it being competing polls or coaches, you know, arguing with the journalists around it. We now know that the Buckeyes are the best team in the country based on the system they've implemented. So it's an interesting moment in college sports, you know, against the backdrop of the NCAA being just ineffectual and the general corruption of it. But still, it was a good game, and we'll see how this plays out next year.
I love that President Obama, of the things that he complained about when he was running in 2008, healthcare, kind of, and having a national football championship are the two things that got fixed.
He was trying to play the middle of America on that one. So,
wait, what? Just quickly, Oliver, like, why is it going on for so long? It shouldn't have been over on New Year's Day, right?
Well, it's because they have a playoff system now, and they've never had that before.
Really?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. People who don't follow college sports, it's weird to them that there hasn't been.
All I noticed is the time, that it's taken up more time in my sphere.
I'm sorry.
I just feel like.
In my opinion, the only thing we should care about in football is whether the best team from 12 teams in the Midwest and the best team from 10 teams on the Pacific Coast, which of those win. You know, I don't give a shit about people from Florida. They're tacky.
No. Hey, Rutgers.
That's what I care about. I just want to know if one of your players stole crab legs.
All right, guys, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk Golden Globes after this.
Hi, I'm Julie Sabatier. I host and produce a show called Destination DIY. It's all about people doing interesting things. And we're really excited to be bringing it to Maximum Fun. When you hear DIY, you might think of knitting or building a birdhouse, but we're really more interested in people doing stuff like hacking the healthcare system, creating their own currencies, building their own spacesuits, that kind of thing. We're here to remind you that you are an authority. And we think you're going to like our stories about makers, builders, inventors, and all kinds of creative people. Check out Destination DIY at MaximumFun.org. or wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are Oliver Wang, Winter Mitchell, Santina Muha, and Margaret Wappler. You guys, Winter was at the Golden Globes. Tell us everything.
Okay. So I went to the Weinstein Netflix party. I got dressed up. I put on this amazing dress. I did my hair. It was amazing.
If you guys want to know what a woman's body is supposed to look like, you go on Winter's Facebook
Shut
profile.
The door. Shut up. Thank you.
Who are you? And who are you wearing?
Who is it? Calvin Klein from head to toe.
All right.
Because I thought Ben Affleck was going to be there. I don't know why. I haven't. I don't know if you know, but I'm very much obsessed with him. So it's like, if I see Ben Affleck, I just want him to glance at me.
Who wouldn't? Anyone would get tired of Jennifer Garner. Like, eventually.
I'm not going to speak ill of the wife. I'm just simply saying that I have a crush and I just want, you know, some acknowledgement.
I think she's cute. I think the opposite. She grew on me.
I agree. She's kind of aged like a fine wine.
No, she's dull. I hate her baby voice. Like, I feel like
we tried.
13 going on 30 made me see through the matrix on her. And Enchanted made me see through the matrix on Amy Adams. All right.
They weren't there. Wait, doesn't matter.
Margaret.
Yes.
Let's talk Amy and Tina. Like,
ooh. I really cannot get enough of them as hosts, mm-hmm. and it makes me so sad that this was apparently their third and final time. Like, they were like, oh, by the way, we just killed this, and we're never doing it again. So that's frustrating to me, but that said, I thought that their whole speech was pretty priceless. I mean, they were nervy. They were going for it.
The Cosby jokes.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was actually the weakest moment of their monologue.
Whoa.
The first one was good, but then when they started doing the impersonation, it was one of those things where it just went on a few beats longer than it needed to.
I love that their response to doing something that will make an entire audience full of slightly drunk actual celebrities uncomfortable was doing it in a goofy way, because I feel like so many, like, when what's his name? The British guy from Derek.
Ricky Gervais.
When Ricky Gervais hosted...
the British guy from Derek.
...was doing sharp jokes that were also sort of needling them, everybody was like, that was too much. And the thing that made it interestingly soft was that it was just a shitty Cosby impression.
Yes, that's what was, to me, actually really funny about it, is they weren't trying to make it, like, super on point, because they just can't. But, like,
it's been
just
dragged to death. They just wanted to touch on it in a way that was going to be... It was perfectly timed, I think. I disagree, Oliver. I think that the weakest moment of the show is when Ricky Gervais came out and then started doing
too.
That was terrible.
And that went on too long.
Too long. And he's amazing, but like, we've already gotten that.
I hope that they are being so vocal about this is their last time to say we are now free agents and you can ask us to do the Oscars next year. Because everybody's failed at the Oscars for like 5 years.
I hope
years.
It means that they can go on and start making like really good TV shows.
But have they given an actual reason?
Again.
No, they haven't given a reason.
Mm. What?
Just done, right?
Well, when they signed on, it was always a 3-year contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could.
But it feels like they could extend it. Everybody,
right, I feel like they don't want to do that because they had their three and that's it. They don't want to become
like the presidency.
They don't. Yes. Yeah. They don't want to become Billy Crystal. No offense to Billy.
Yeah.
They made me miss really good late night, actually. It made me.
Yeah.
We've gotten into such a space of affability in late night that I was like, oh, jokes. So, I mean, there was a lot of like issuiness going on. Like George and Amal were both wearing Je Suis Charlie buttons. You had the Cosby jokes, like Selma references to Michael Brown and Eric Garner, and the dude from the Hollywood Foreign Press talking about free speech. Was so impressed by how quickly Meryl hopped up to be like, no, this is an applause break. You guys don't get to not applause break this.
Yeah.
Jessica Chastain was a little slower on the bullet. but were you annoyed by that? Like, Hollywood patting itself on the back for how right-thinking it is never great. But when you're Amal Alamuddin and, like, a human rights attorney...
You needed to class it up.
How about what they said about Clooney getting the
Lifetime Achievement Award. That was a brilliant joke.
Brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that, like, if it's political and if it's affecting all of us, then you should totally address this. Because if you don't address it, you look tone deaf and it looks like Hollywood doesn't care about anything but your money. But, I mean, you go back to, like, when we started the AIDS research and funding and, you know, fundraising for that. That was huge in Philadelphia. And that was, you know, Denzel and Tom Hanks and it broke so many cultural barriers that I think it is important that these people who have so much influence get on stage and say something. Just don't, like, beat our faces in. Bring the gongs.
Well, it's interesting because it's essentially just a 3-hour ad for movies and TV, but it's also sort of one moment of like unalloyed exposure for these people to just sort of like get to say what they really care about or whatever.
I always feel like the self-congratulation from Hollywood is thicker during the Oscars than Golden Globes.
Yes!
You know, like the Golden Globes, 100%. I feel like it's looser and I'm down with what people are saying. And I can appreciate that people can go up there and say, okay, yeah, we've done some good things by putting this movie out, Selma, whatever, but there's still so much work to do. I feel like that note gets struck more at the Golden Globes than at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how the rest of you felt about it, but I think within the first maybe 30, 45 minutes, I really felt, and this was really between Transparent winning, Gina Rodriguez winning and having her speech. I forget who the actress was talking about, but basically talking about rape and letters she got from a rape victim. But in those first – that first hour of the show before it kind of descended into the same award show we see 1,000 times every year, I really feel like the Golden Globes had somehow managed to transcend, at the very least, the Emmys, which I've never really enjoyed watching, and was probably a lot more interesting than the Oscars typically manages to be.
Well, yeah.
And maybe it was just because of who won, but that sort of set a tone that I thought was, wow, this is a really interesting, to the extent that all award shows are dog and pony shows, it was a really interesting dog and pony show for at least that first hour.
Yeah. I saw a lot of diversity, which made me happy, too. Yeah. You know what I mean? I felt like a lot of course, I'm going to be interested in the movie about the guy in the wheelchair, you know yeah. what I mean? And yeah, and Jane the Virgin, and I agree with what you're saying. I thought it was interesting dynamic.
Joanna Froggatt winning for Downton Abbey, and I had heard because
oh,
I
right, yeah, there we
I,
go. Yes.
I didn't watch until yesterday, and like I had heard that she referenced like rape victims, and I was like, oh God, really? Because I think Anna is kind of an insufferable
right
character. But like then she got up there and it was like a really touching,
a really good speech.
Legitimate yeah. moment. Yeah. And you understood the way that like when you are an actor doing something like this, it is public, like it's art that is resonant for people and they're going to reach out to you. Margaret, I want to talk to you about TV award shows are crappy because you end up with Murphy Brown winning Best Actress 10 years in a row and you have these like eras. But I felt like there was, and the Golden Globes can be screwy sometimes. And I feel like they were a little bit screwy this year.
Yeah.
But it really did feel like that there was a sea change with Fargo, with Transparent, with Jane the Virgin.
Yeah. I mean, in the moment that Gina Rodriguez won, the thing I loved about it is that she actually sounded genuinely excited and surprised to win. And mm-hmm. that can be a rare moment on those award shows. You know, it's almost like when you see Taylor Swift win right. another Grammy and she's like, oh, surprise face once again. And you're like, nobody's convinced. I mean, Gina Rodriguez seemed just so bubbly and happy about it. I haven't seen Jane the Virgin, but it definitely makes me excited to go see it now, like even more.
I co-sign.
Yeah.
I love that Oliver is the Jane the Virgin head in this room.
It's really good. And she saved her show. It got, you saw it got renewed like the very next day.
Oh, really?
It was hanging in that, like, I'm sure it was dependent on what would happen wow. Sunday night. But she saved, I mean, this girl is like the next Eva Longoria.
No pressure.
No pressure.
And to go back to what Margaret was saying at the very beginning, I mean, when's the last time someone is out there shouting out trans people and yeah. making and having
yeah.
a moment.
Never. Yeah.
In an amazing pantsuit, if I may add. You know?
it's so interesting because of like the conversation that's happened between the trans community and people like cis people winning awards for their brave performances.
Right. Let's
and Jared Leto was a yeah. dickbag last year.
Oh, he was totally an asshole.
Yeah. And we're still in a situation where like a heterosexual cis man gets cast as a trans woman.
Right.
And that's not the best, but that he at least understands.
Yeah, I mean, Jeffrey Tambor is, yeah, a cisgendered man. But at the same time, if you look at Jill Soloway and what her hiring practices have been on the show, it's incredible. I mean,
yeah.
she's had tons of trans people on staff. She has two full-time advisors, I think three full-time advisors. So that kind of effort, I feel like, does in some way make up for who's on the screen.
Well, it really is like a hand-up situation where trans comedians and improvisers and actors, I feel like I'm just so much more frequently now hearing people get brought up with their Transparent credit, you know? And like everybody needs that first credit so that we have mm-hmm. trans men and women that we can hire.
Mm-hmm. And Liver and Cox, let's not forget about.
Love her.
Orange is the New Black.
All right. We really quickly, let's just talk about movies. Basically, no one expected Grand Budapest Hotel to win. And then Boyhood, I just think it's so interesting because usually you have the biggest movie of the year winning Best Picture at things. And I like that this biggest movie of the year wasn't $1 billion of special effects. It was 12 years of hard work. What are people's thoughts on these screwy, screwy Best Pictures?
I loved Boyhood. I really loved it. It was so genius. I feel personally connected to so many things in that movie. I felt like it was so subtle. Certain things in that movie just were like, oh my God, was he looking through my window in my suburban home? Patricia Arquette deserved, in my opinion, to win. I loved just the subtlety of that movie and the way that they were able to do it over time allowed them to maintain that subtlety. And just how he had, you know, the songs and the references from each time and how they were able to do that, and just well deserved. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I love Boyhood. I think it's a tremendous film. I mean, I've heard people complaining. It's funny to me. I've heard people complaining that like nothing happens in the movie. And there is a degree of truth to that in the sense that there is not one big, striking, massive event. But that's what makes it so interesting mm-hmm. is that it doesn't play by the usual playbook that movies give us. We're like, oh, something catastrophic has to happen.
But there's everything just life. That happens to you in life dictates the next phase thing. Of your life, which is what this film did. Having an, I don't want to give stuff away, but having an abusive stepfather, I think, is not giving too much away, dictates who you are. Your parents getting divorced Absolutely. Dictates who you are. Your father leaving, coming back dictates who you are. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like those, the reason why it stuck with so many people is because those situations are common to most people that you can have like a conversation about it with someone else because you know someone who's gone through it, because usually you deal with things as a community. So I think that's why that movie sort of went straight to the heart for a lot of the voters. I'm sure they could identify with it.
Well, just the sheer effort of it, too. I mean, really being able to like get these actors together once a year or whatever it was to film for 12 years. I mean, you do see Patricia Arquette's face change a little bit. You see Ethan Hawke like settle into this different kind of man. Like, it's fascinating on
and
that level.
I heard that you're only allowed to have contracts for 7 or 8 years or so. So they couldn't even be contracted. This was like a effort of faith. Which, in this industry, good for them.
Good for them.
Do we have any strong best or worst dresses, Margaret?
Oh, I was really curious about what Carrie Marshall had going on.
Carrie Marshall?
Sorry.
Carrie Washington.
Carrie Washington.
Oh,
yeah.
It was, okay. I had opinions about that because that fabric didn't move. And I started to be like, that's terrible. She looks like she's playing like a girlfriend for Riker from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh my God.
Circa 91, and then I was maybe like, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it was like heavy-duty tinfoil that had been spray-painted pink. And
it looked like a Project Runway dress.
I honestly thought her hair was more busted. Mm-hmm. And it's Kerry Washington, who's pretty much always throwing down with perfect hair. And I was...
The hair looked good.
Oh, I think she looked good from up, all the way up here.
The hair looked good.
I thought it was questionable.
Up, great.
Nobody can beat that lip game these days.
No.
Lip game.
Winner. You got a dress?
J-Lo. I'm sorry. She's never failed me at the Globes except for when she wore that. No, that was Oscars. No, she's never failed me at the Globes.
J-Lo,
she brings it.
J-Lo is my bad dress.
I'm with Guy in this one.
J-Lo was the thing that I looked at. And it, like when I first saw it, I was like, this is magnificent.
No.
I saw whatever wiring it was just pushing into her boob. And I was
I'm
uncomfortable.
Full Sophia Loren, Elizabeth Taylor. She brings the Liz Taylor like every time.
That was the exciting thing about seeing Jennifer Lopez last night and realizing she hasn't done anything in forever. And like to kids today, she's maybe gonna be one of those people who are like, yeah, she's famous. I don't know what she does, but
you
she's
titled, but
are,
you know.
We're gonna this is a whole segment for next week because you've just offended all my sensibilities. I am a J-Lo-ologist certified. She really knows fashion. She cares about not only her craft, but she cares about her fashion game. And she brings it.
I will say this much about the dress, which I didn't like. I'm like, I thought it would have been my worst one, partly because I feel like we've seen that thing before because of the Versace dress from way back when. But it did allow Jeremy Renner to bust out that you brought the Globes one liner, which is a little obvious.
We get that joke every fucking year.
I know. But somehow it dress in a way that I was like, all right, fine. Someone at least
said
it.
But if a woman said it about a dude's package...
If a guy walked out with his balls hanging out,
that would be
just the side ball, I might make a joke.
Just one or two.
That might be the new look, the side ball look.
You guys, we're calling it for 2015. It's the year of
side ball. Oh, my God.
We'll be right back after this.
Hello, I'm Taku, the Elven Magician.
Merle Highchurch here, the master of clerical magic.
I'm Magnus Burnsides, the fighter.
Did you guys like that? Did you, the listener, like that? You were just swept up in a world of high fantasy and magic where anything can happen and anything is possible.
Hi, I'm Griffin McElroy, Dungeon Master for The Adventure Zone, a new podcast on Maximum Fun, in which magic and mystery intertwine for a very erotically charged role-playing experience. You can catch it every other Thursday here on MaximumFun.org or iTunes. It's for Dungeons & Dragons, but with family.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Brand, and with me in the studio are Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, Oliver Wang, and Santina Muha. Every week on Pop Rocket, we'll be asking our panel, what's your jam? Margaret, what's your jam?
My jam this week is Sleater-Kinney's Price Tag. It's from their new album, No Cities to Love. So just a little bit about these ladies. It's a trio. They had just ferocious energy coming up in the late 90s, and by 2006, they went on hiatus. And this is a return to form for them. And the album is super exciting to me because it sounds meticulous and completely explosive at the same time.
Can we hear some of that? Some hardcore lady rock and roll.
They want to bring it.
We don't get too much of that anymore.
I know. This was the band that was supposed to, like, usher in a whole revolution, which in some ways has happened and in some ways not. But
in one sentence, explain the difference between Luscious Jackson and Slater Kinney.
Ooh, please. dying.
No keyboards, which was a major part of Luscious Jackson. I also just have to say a quick shout out to Janet Weiss, the drummer. Because that, to me, is what hangs Slater Kinney together so well.
Uh-huh.
I don't think Luscious Jackson quite had that.
No. Is this going to tear Carrie Brownstein away from her rich sketch comedy career?
No way. No way. I think this has gone to just be her little, like, indie habit. This is her cred that she goes back to burnish every now and again.
Santina, what is your jam this week?
Okay, my jam is the theme song from The Affair, which I just completed. So, the song is Container by Fiona Apple. And I never fast forward the opening credits.
Never.
Which is how I know I love that song. It's
I love
really
that you
haunting.
Picked that.
It's beautiful. I love it. And I love a good Fiona Apple throwback.
Mm-hmm.
It's hauntingly beautiful.
I was screaming into the canyon at the moment of my death. The echo I created, I lasted my last breath. My voice, it made an avalanche and buried a man I never knew. And when he died, his widow bride met your daddy and they made you. I have only one thing to do, and that's be the way that I am and then sink back into the ocean. I have only one thing to do, and that's be the way that I am and then sink back into the ocean. I have only one thing to do, and that's be the way that I am and then sink back into the ocean. Sink back into the ocean. Sink back into
the ocean. Tina's Mariah carrying to this song in here. Miming.
Oh,
it's a good song.
That is haunting and beautiful.
It's beautiful. I never fast forward through it either.
Are we going to get Fiona Apple back?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get her back.
It's interesting to think about Fiona Apple at a time of Taylor Swifting and stuff like that, in that we had this sort of like, she was sort of chewed up and spit out by being 19 and famous, and we all sort of considered her, we disposed of her, and it's been 20 years.
But she had that great album come out a couple years ago that to me was just like, I mean, just a powerhouse. I also saw her live around that same time. And I mean, she's 100% got it. And mm-hmm. when I say I got it, I mean, she's still just as crazy and like attention grabbing as ever. You watch her perform. You're like, are you going to fall apart or are you just going to like soar to the sky? And it just constantly teeters on that edge. And that's exciting to me to see.
She has like a Jemima Kirk thing to me.
No, but yeah, she had the fatal misfortune of coming up in the Prozac Nation era, where they just tried to assign a personality to her, and she was like, no. She's like, I'm actually this mentally disturbed. I need to be creative and an artist. Do not make me sell shirts at Express. Like, I'm not. That's not my jam.
If I have to live through floral prints on black a second time, I'm just excited that, like, somebody who was maybe underserved by the year 1997, like, gets another chance. And also, I think we can take a woman who is an adult who maybe is a little bit off a rocker but creative in a way that a 19-year-old, we were just so ready to say she's so stupid.
What does she know?
Yeah. Oliver, thoughts on Fiona?
Didn't listen to her much then. I'm still not listening to her much now.
Wow.
Men.
Oliver.
Sorry. All right, Winner Mitchell, what's your jam?
Doja Cat. And the song is called No Police. And the reason I like it is I'm getting into, like, these girls that, like, look like they're stepping out of, like, a Lisa Frank or they were, like, background players in a schlocky Roger Corman movie in the 60s. That's their aesthetic. But then they all sound like sort of like bubblegum pop 50s singers that, like, you know, croony pop singers, and their songs are very much like if Lana Del Rey was like on Celexa, you know, like if like if she was like really just smoking a J and like getting into it, and this is the music that would come from it. So I like, and she sounds like Rihanna, but in this way more like before Rihanna got the fame way.
Let me first say, Winter and I are now pitching a show that is just us taking mid-level pop stars and trying to get their meds right.
On TLC!
Colin, can we hear some of this?
Again, like last week, I can make babies to this song. I can listen to it while I'm reading or writing. I can, if I'm driving on the one in the sun.
Top down.
Yeah, top down, cruising. I like her voice.
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Oliver, what's your jam?
I never thought I'd be plugging a song that's on a soundtrack for SpongeBob SquarePants, but we have arrived here. This is NERD, which I can't remember the last time they were really united as a group, but basically it's the Neptunes. Pharrell and Chad Hugo reunited, and it's called Squeeze Me.
Yay!
Yeah!
I'm in.
We've gotten, obviously the last 2 years have been the years of Pharrell, but it's been Pharrell and his sort of Niles Rogers 70s disco groove. And it's really fun to hear him and Chad not just reunite, but actually make a track that sounds like a Neptunes track. Like, that is unmistakably some early OOs brought into the present Neptune stees. Like the big synth sound, the chords, the arrangement. I mean, it is a song that's made for the SpongeBob SquarePants soundtrack, so it's not going to be the deepest tracks. Then again, Happy was not exactly like a tour de force of songwriting either, but it is catchy, and I just like hearing that Neptune sound. It's been too long.
There is something so beautiful about taking an extremely, like, talented musician and forcing him to make something for 5-year-olds and their moms once a year, just once a year, and then we'll use it for the rest of the year to sell VW Bugs. but we get that out of him. Can I get a solid definition of stees from you?
What? Style?
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was a good era. He's talking about a really good era of music.
I'm not familiar with the word stees, and so it means style.
It means style.
All right. My jam is stupid, you guys. After Into the Woods, went into a deep James Lapine place. Not a deep Sondheim place, but a deep James Lapine place. He's the guy who wrote the book and directed Into the Woods on Broadway. And then he also wrote the screenplay of Into the Woods. And this is a musical from the early 90s that was sort of one of the... It's one of the best and most straightforward of your, like, 80s, 90s AIDS musicals. But it's also just sort of, like, the most prosaic of representations of gay guys on Broadway that you got. It's from Falsettos, and this is the opening number, Four Jews in a Room Bitching.
Four Jews in a room bitching. Four Jews in a room plus. Hey, cry. He's bitching, they're bitching, we're bitching. Bitch, 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 bitch. Funny, 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 funny. Bitch, 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 bitch. All the time.
And the thing that is fascinating to me about it is, like, at a time when you guys have to watch Looking between now and next week.
Promise.
I also believe that I'm starting a small Just For Me podcast that is just me and gay comedians complaining about Looking. But I'm obsessed with sort of... gay people, but gay men particularly, are terrible at representing ourselves. We can write the fuck out of something about other people and, like, let me look into the heart of a woman, yes, but when it's representing a gay guy, we get into the space of fear and uncertainty. And the place that doesn't exist is Broadway, because it's just for fags and Jews. And so we're like, we can be honest here. And like, there's just something so lovely about, you know, I mean, it's a play, the climax of which is a guy to his dying lover talking about, who am I going to blame for my life now that you're gone? But just sort of going into it from a place of bitch, 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 funny, 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 funny. And the songs are so fucking catchy.
I like it. What's the name of the play again?
It's called Falsettos. Also in 1991 or two when I saw it on the Tonys. And I was like,
of course it was on the Tonys.
Gay, huh? I need to learn about this thing. And it was magnificent. All right, you guys, that's it for this week's Pop Rocket. Thanks to Avi Warner, June Song Provider, Eschloss, HTR, or I guess Hater 907, for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. You guys, review us on iTunes. We want to read things about ourselves.
Yes.
Please. I want reviews that talk about the rich tones in Oliver's voice. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the reviews that say how much you have the exact same musical taste as Santina.
Yeah.
And I should also write that review because I have the exact same musical taste as Santina. Let us know what you think on Twitter at PRPod. Like us on Facebook. We'll post show notes every week at MaximumFun.org. You have been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winna Mitchell, Santina Muha, Margaret Wappler, and thank God again, Oliver Wang.
Oh, no.
We missed you last week. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. I never pronounced that correctly. Let us know what you think of the show on Twitter, the MaxFun forums, Reddit, or our Facebook page. We are a production of MaximumFun.org. Great thanks to fearless leader Jesse Thorne. And our producer is the sextastic Colin Anderson.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.